seconds here. Okay. I call this Human Services Committee meeting to order on Monday, December 12, 2022 at 12 p.m. The roll call went around. I think everyone got it.
Mm-hmm.
All committee members are present except Supervisor Gentz. Citizens' comments? Are there any citizens' comments? Any citizens' comments? Seeing none, citizens' comments are closed. Comments from me are, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Supervisor Amanda Nedweski. I chair this committee. Thank you all for coming out today. I know it's an odd time for us to meet, but we felt that this topic was really important, and we've delayed it a couple times already, so we wanted to make sure that the people in the community who wanted to hear about it had an opportunity to hear about it as soon as possible. So thank you again for being flexible with the time of the meeting, especially committee members. I appreciate it. There is a dial-in option. Right now, no one is on, so we'll leave that open and people will join as we go. Any comments from committee members? Any comments from other supervisors in attendance? And youth and governance is not present. So we can go ahead and proceed with the 2022 Health Equity Report presentation by Dr. Jen Freiheit.
Hi, thank you, Chairman Nedweski and members. I'm Dr. Jen Freiheit. I'm your county health officer with the Kenosha County Public Health Division. And I'm excited to come talk today about health equity. So just wanted to do some level setting or some ground setting with some definitions we'll get to. And hopefully you all received the health equity report that was sent out ahead of time in your packet, because I'll be referencing that. But equity is not about quantity. It's not about giving more to one group of people or less to another group of people. It's about understanding that different communities have different needs and providing resources that appropriately meet those needs. It's about understanding the unique needs of different communities, such as where they live, their economic status, education opportunities, race, and many other factors. Equity helps us in public health to reduce the need for Band-Aid programs, and so it's not about giving money, but finding the best set and the best use of programs and services, and removing barriers to those programs for our community. So, with that, hopefully this works here. Oh, it worked just a minute ago, didn't it? All right, so I just had to use a football analogy for equity, because to add a little humor to this, I don't know what side, I'm sure the room is half split between these two teams or whatnot, but the NFL actually employs equity. So depending upon if you're the second to worst team or the worst team in the league, next year in the NFL draft, you get first or second pick, right? So that's employing equity. That's the NFL trying to make an equal playing field, for lack of a better term, right? So so that the football teams all have a new chance to get at the new resources, the best players, the next year. And so I just wanted to use that analogy of the NFL draft, because the American dream is not easily attainable for everybody. And everyone deserves to have a long, healthy life and live in safe neighborhoods and in safe houses. And making all of our communities healthy starts with us, all of us in the room and in part of the public health system. And it's our responsibility. So that's just, I like analogies. That helps us all to understand a little bit better. But equity doesn't come out of Kenosha County Public Health or out of my head. This is something that is worldwide. So for example, in our state statutes, we have requirements to do social determinants of health work, equity work. So for example, in Statute 140, this is sort of local public health's guiding statute that says what we need to do to make sure that we're an appropriate health department. And so just a couple of the points pulled out here in Statute 140 are that we have a diverse workforce and that we provide programs and services that create health equity. Then there's also the state statutes of what the state health department is required. That's Chapter 250 and 251. And that obviously impacts local public health as we work together within a system. So I won't read word for word there, but you can see that it fosters local involvement and how we look at reducing or eliminating health disparities. And there's obviously much more language in the state statute there. So this is something that we are bound to. We have what's called a 140 review, statute 140 review every 5 or so years, where they come to make sure that our health department, it's an audit, if you will, to make sure that we're doing the work we're supposed to be doing. And then, of course, you all passed the county resolution in August of 2020 that racism is a public health crisis. So these are just some of the components at the state statute level. But I also wanted to talk how equity is throughout many, many organizations. And I know this slide is very crowded and hard to read, but I just wanted to point out some of the systems. For example, in the upper left corner is the National Academy of Medicine. And you can see the dark blue background, how, you know, even for the world of medicine, health equity through systems, public health systems, is a very important component. In the upper right corner is the Public Health National Center for Innovations. And you can see how they have the equity line around that. This has been in place since 2013. I know equity seems to be sort of a newer buzzword, but it is what public health has been doing for generations. And some of these are our guiding principles on what we do, especially the one in the lower left, the 10 essential public health services. If you go anywhere in Canada or the US, these are local public health's guiding principles, the 10 essential services that we must provide. So this came out of 1994. The Public Health Functions Steering Committee and National Public Health Performance Standards. You also have the Commonwealth Fund. The lower right-hand corner is the de Beaumont Foundation. So there's several national entities that you can see where equity is front and center as not its own program or its own service, but intertwined through all that we do in public health. And I can send links for all of these if you like as well, too. Bringing it a little bit closer to home is in public health, we, especially after the COVID pandemic, but this even came about before, is how can we serve our communities better? And it's called Public Health 3.0 in the top left corner there. And it's a way of modernizing what do we need to do to better prepare for our communities. In the upper right corner, you'll see that there's a Wisconsin Population Health and Equity Report Card that comes out of Madison. Wisconsin has a grade of C as far as health in amongst all the states. And you'll find other things in this report, such as far as poor health and mortality, the grade of C. Kenosha County's housing cost burden is also listed in here. We are one of 9 of the worst counties as far as having the highest burden for housing in that report. And all of these things play a factor into someone's health. In the lower left-hand corner, we have the Public Health Accreditation Board. At one point in time, Kenosha County Public Health was accredited. We currently are not. There was a cost factor to that. But we still operate with all the principles and all of the materials we developed during that accreditation process. So FAB, the Public Health Accreditation Board, has over 23 measures that ensure that equity is happening throughout programs and services. And then, of course, the 140 review, the statutory review that we have from the State Health Department is in the lower corner, where they also require initiatives to reduce racial and ethnic burdens to health in our communities. So that's just a little bit more to bring it closer to home. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention other state initiatives, such as Executive Orders 17 and 59 for the creation of a Health Equity Council and relating to diversity, equity, inclusion within state government. Our state division of public health, our health services, has the Office of Health Equity. And all of these factor and play into a role as far as what our services that we're delivering, the grants we receive, that we work together as a system. We're not independent. This isn't something that just Kenosha County Public Health is working on. So public health employees are trained to diagnose the health of a community, whereas you think of the medical community, they're trained to diagnose the health of a person. So we are obviously looking at population-wide health. We listen to people who know the community best, such as yourselves, and we draw upon science and data in order to recognize patterns and problems. And in the US, you know, we spend so much time and money on healthcare, and we're not getting healthier as a nation. And it's because we wait to treat people until after they're sick. And so this is where public health steps in. We come in to try to stop threats before they start, to ensure your restaurants are healthy, you know, that you're not gonna get food poisoned, and all of that sort of thing. So public health has these guiding principles where we have a responsibility to understand our patients, our clients, and our residents, their social needs. We have a responsibility to those same patients, clients, and residents to give them the resources they need to be healthy. Make sure that our workforce is understanding of all of those social and economic needs so that we can appropriately deliver those services. And then, of course, to collect data, and not just for return on investment, but to improve overall health. So, with getting to the report now, if you don't mind, if you have it with you, on page 2 are the definitions. This was a direct request of Chairwoman Nedweski and one of our Board of Health members. We get so used to dealing with these definitions in public health that it was a very valid question to say, what definition are you operating under? And these definitions, we do not make these up. All of these definitions come from the World Health Organization or the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So the whole country operates under these same definitions. So I just wanted to point out a couple. Health equity, again, because I think it's hard to sort of wrap heads around, is that everyone has a fair and just opportunity to be as healthy as possible. This requires removing barriers to health, such as poverty, discrimination, etc. And I wanted to point out health inequities, because you might think that's just the opposite, but there's subtle nuances. And health inequities are the differences in health outcomes of a population or group of people, of which you could slice and dice Kenosha County into any sort of population or group, that are systemic, patterned, unnecessary, avoidable, unfair, or unjust. So trying to remove those barriers so that people can achieve optimal health. And then the third one I just wanted to point out is you'll also hear us use the word social determinants of health, and that is the conditions in which people are born, grow, live, work, or age that influence health, such as your zip code, income, education, race, ethnicity, gender, etc. So those social determinants of health are what we in total encompass look at when we're putting on a health service or a program. And I'll explain that more with the next slide, because this is on page 2 of your report. If there's nothing else that you read in this report, this graph is the most important one to sort of understand. So 50% of health outcomes are determined by access to social and economic opportunities. And I have to repeat that, 50%. So when you look at this chart in the center column, if you go toward the bottom, you'll see that social and economic factors are 40% of determining a person's health outcomes. So that's education, employment, income, safety. All of those things account for 40% of a person's health. If you look just below that, physical environment, clean air, food and water, clean housing, transportation, that is all 10% of determining a person's health outcomes. So 50%, based upon where we live, how much money we make, the resources and support available in our homes, in our neighborhoods, in our communities. So when we talk about, I know a lot of people think about public health, they think about nutrition and obesity, you know, physical fitness and nutrition. And those you can see are higher up the health behaviors, right? You have, you know, diet and exercise, substance use, etc. If we as a public health agency were only to focus on just the health behavior, we would be wasting money. We would not be able to solve that issue. So in public health, we are trained to look at, like I said, the community, the population health, which includes access to care, which is 20% of determining somebody's health outcomes, and then that 50%, all of those social and economic factors. So that is why public health looks at this sort of holistic approach to developing policies and programs, as you can see on the left, lower left. That's where we can make a difference in the population's health, through looking at those health factors. And just because I'm a visual person, on page 4 of your report is another graph, because I think there's a lot of discussion about what's the difference between equality and equity. And equity doesn't divide us. It actually unites us. It allows us to learn about our neighboring communities and our neighbors, and to better understand how health outcomes of each individual group affect us all as a whole, as a community. And equity, or equality, ignores differences, whereas equity allows us to see the complexities and unique pieces of people and communities. As public health professionals, this enables us to more efficiently and cost-effectively design our interventions and programs. So again, more effective, more cost-effective programs by employing an equity approach for specific communities or populations for overall better health outcomes. So you can see in this visualization, if we gave the exact same bicycle to all different people, it doesn't work for every single person. Whereas if we design the bicycle, for lack of a better term, in this graph, you know, making a different bicycle for differing abilities or for, you know, children or smaller people, then we can achieve optimal health outcomes. So this is just a good visualization of understanding equality versus equity. And that's in your report. So investing in equity can help our county by complying with regulatory requirements. It allows us to apply for more federal and state grant dollars. It helps stabilize care. It reduces preventable utilization of our hospitals, the emergency departments. You've all heard the horror stories of how much our emergency departments are overused when not necessary. Same with 911. How many people use 911 when it might not be 911 worthy? And that's where public health can step in. We save money for the taxpayers by employing prevention programs that can help the use of the services so that the hospitals and the emergency departments can be there for the people who really need them. And so that's where we come in with population health-wide prevention programs to help save the taxpayer dollars to operate through this way. And I will just point out that all of the data that we included in here, as you will note, we didn't just cherry pick the data for this report. We chose to highlight data that represented the various areas of the social determinants of health, as we saw on page two. So it includes housing, income level, education, because of how important those are to determining somebody's health. So it wasn't just a report on, I'm gonna use the obesity and nutrition examples for example. So it shows that disparities, you know, they do exist by race, but they also exist by economic status and several other factors as well too. And this is all across the country. This isn't just Kenosha. There's similar data trends of how low-income communities experience disproportionate health disparities and disparities in the social determinants of health. So you'll notice on page five, and I'm not gonna go in through every page, but on page five, it talks about life expectancy of males based upon their income. On page six, it goes through household economic level for Kenosha County. And just for an example, because when I say public health is looking at data from all different standpoints and lenses, this slide shows the exact same information that's on page six of the report. So it's basically you could use a bar chart and percentages, or you can use a GIS mapped graph. But this data is vital because you know, it helps us to inform our programs and services, to know where we need to target more outreach and more services.
Is it okay to ask a question on this chart, or did you want to wait to the end?
It's quick. I kind of promised Dr. Jen that we let her get through everything.
Oh, okay.
So but right. If you, it's quick.
All right. I'll wait.
I'll be here. I'm not leaving. All right.
I won't break your promise.
Our conclusion from this chart is that there's a wide range of wealth in the county. Obviously, we all know that. That some municipalities have more poverty or wealth than others. But the good news is that nowhere in the county is the poverty greater than 60% of the population. We do see that 1 in 4 households, though, are impoverished households, as identified by the ALICE algorithm. And lower income is a strong indicator of worse health outcomes, so including heart disease, earlier mortality, et cetera, versus higher income groups. So yeah, I wasn't gonna go through every chart, but we can certainly answer any questions. But just to kind of give you a sense and sort of put us all on the same page, I will just say, before quickly going to questions, I remember when I was interviewed, when I came in for the position, and I sat in the room with John and Clara Tappa and Jenny Tunkies, and they said, what do you need to succeed in this position? And one of the things I said was, this health department needs an epidemiologist. And it's for the sole purpose of creating more cost-effective programs and services that we're basing things on science and data, as opposed to just throwing a program out there to see if it sticks. That we're targeting to where the need is and where the gaps are in the community. And this department now does have a full-time epidemiologist who is informing all of our programs and services, and it is invaluable. We are seen as a leader in the state. I'll also talk a little bit later about our community health assessment. So things such as this health equity report, our community health assessment, several other data sources are what we pull together to inform our work. And that wasn't happening before. And so I think, pulling all of this together, and we can always, if you all need any specific data teased out, we can provide that at any time for you, you know, depending upon your needs or questions that you have there. And one other thing I wanted to point out is that our community health assessment, this health equity report, is not just for Kenosha County Public Health. Our hospitals have bought into this. They help pay for the community health assessment, for example. Our federally qualified health center, Pillar Health, Kenosha Community Health Center, they look at all of this. Several not-for-profits look at our health equity report, our community health assessment. So it's part of us all being this public health system where we're all looking at the data to raise up what we're doing in our work in Kenosha County. So I will pause now for questions.
Good Supervisor Kearns.
Well, thank you for giving me the floor. Since we didn't stop on that chart, can I
can go back.
Open to other questions, and then I'll come back to that chart later. We have this idea of equity, and you talked about it a lot, and that WCA actually had a session on it. They had a company called Frameworks Institute. They're a communications think tank out of DC, and they talked about how to frame communications on the concept of equity, if I understand what their session was. So they actually had a session just to deal with this idea of the phrase of equity, and you mentioned the word equity as a newer buzzword in your presentation. So looking at the history of this, I mean, Wisconsin was the first state in the country to have an income tax, and they had a progressive income tax. If you earned more money, you paid a higher rate. If you earned less money, you paid a lower rate or nothing. That, I think, might be an early adoption of the concept of equity going back, you know, 80 years, 100 years, whenever La Follette put that in. So we've had this idea of equity in our state for a century or longer. I wanted to read something that I saw in, there's a lot of things I read, but one of the things I like the most is a thing called The Economist. It's a periodical out of the United Kingdom, so some of the phraseology it can be a little triggering here, but it's not as triggering. But they said governments are spending much more in particular on health care. And then they said in 1979, the bottom fifth of U.S. earners received means-tested transfers of one-third of their pre-tax income. By 2018, greater than two-thirds of their pre-tax income is now also, they also get transfers. So the bottom 20% of income earners are now getting two-thirds of their income in government transfers in addition to their income. So since 79, that's been happening. So isn't that this concept of equity that's been going on now for since that period of time where the top 80% is shifting twice as much for health than it did in 79? I mean, would that be, our country is doing quite a bit with this concept of equity?
Or? I mean, yeah, and that's where I think, you know, and especially in public health, we've been doing equity for generations, right? You know, getting services where they need, where they're needed. Yeah. And so certainly there's many examples of that being employed through, you know, all sectors. Public health departments aren't necessarily considered health care, right? We're not where you go when you're sick, or, you know, we're not the primary care physicians. We have programs that try to keep people healthy out of the doctor's office. But I mean, yeah, certainly all sectors have their form of what they've been doing. I think the terminology, the phraseology has risen to more prominence recently, and it causes more differing perspectives on it. But it's been employed for generations.
So just, and I'll have a few more questions, but I should yield the floor to not hog all the time here. But it talks about the transfers doubling since 79. A lot of it, some of it are these programs, but the vast majority are other programs. But it talks about means testing. And in the charts that I read that you sent out in a little bit of your discussion, isn't that, I mean, I used to be an auditor and I audited some of these programs, MCH I used to audit. And that we looked at the means testing, so you had to be income qualified or income eligible. So are most of the participants in these programs, are most of them income qualified or income eligible, or is there a group that, you know, is like 90% income qualified or income eligible, or is it less, are there a lot that are not income qualified or income eligible?
I won't give you a percentage, but yes, like our asthma program is income qualified, our home visitation program is income qualified. I don't know the exact percentage, and I can get that for you, but some of our programs are and some are not.
So you look at all these criteria, But it, the, probably one of the most pervasive one is the income. And that's a driver of need here.
Correct.
And you showed that in your presentation and also the charts you sent out. So, and again, that's something we've been doing in our state for decades. So I just wanted to ask a few questions in that area, and then I'll yield the floor and come back later.
I have some questions.
Supervisor Sacker.
I have 2.5 pages of questions, so I'll settle down.
Are they specific to health equity?
Yes.
Well, to the presentation. Let's pick your top three.
What is stopping anybody in this county from getting what they need? We are just pouring money into this. What's the hindrances to them getting exactly what they need? What are the barriers?
There's a lot of barriers. That's a multi-pronged question that has many, many answers. So, I mean, from enough resources, human resources, cost resources perspective.
So and, we're not spending enough money?
It depends. I mean, every program's different, so it's hard to give you a blanket answer on that. But, there's varying policies and procedures or practices, whether it's, through a hospital or a medical care or, through county or city government sometimes that can prohibit certain resources getting where they need to be. And it's a hard question to answer.
If it's this difficult, how do we achieve equity?
Yeah, well, so part of where we start with is, for example, the community health assessment is a good theoretical place to start because we collect the information, we collect the data. Okay, let's say we find out that we need extensive XYZ resources in this zip code. So then whether we have a program or we try to find funding to fund a program or whatever we need to do then to provide that service. So it's really collecting the information, determining what we can and can't do, what partners need to be involved in that, and who should be in charge of that, if you will, and then putting that into practice, evaluating that, seeing if it worked, seeing what needs to be tweaked, and continuous quality improvement on that cycle.
What if people choose not to participate?
And that will always happen, right?
So we're being graded, in a sense, by the state on with people who don't want to participate, right? Because there's going to be that percentage of people that, and so how do we, it just seems like we're in this, the definition here creates an impossibility of achieving the goal that's put out there.
Not necessarily, because we do achieve amazing things. So with our various programs, and this is where, and you guys have both heard me say the example only because this is a really good one to understand, but I will never know how many women didn't get breast cancer because we paid for their mammogram. That's part of our Well Woman program, right? So it is hard to quantify prevention, to say how many people did we help. But that's where we use both quantitative and qualitative data to say, but what is the story and what is the outcome? Our home visitation program, for example, we're in their homes. We're helping them from moment of conception to age 5 to say, proper prenatal nutrition and care, healthy delivery, how we have babies in car seats and sleeping on their back, et cetera. So, giving them all the resources and tools they need so that we can raise healthy children. So we don't get graded per se, like you didn't achieve, some of our objectives are very clear. You have to get this X number of people, or you have to do this. Every grant, we're 58% grant funded. So over 60 different grants?
60 programs.
Yeah, 60 different programs. So some of them have very specific measures. Some of them don't. So every program and service is different.
How will we know when we've satisfactorily achieved the equity that you're looking for here? Or is this going to be a never-ending pursuit?
I mean, with societal issues, there's always issues. Okay. We're always shooting for that North Star.
Yeah. I've got a lot more questions, but I'll have to pass them on.
I have a lot of questions from the community.
Sure.
So I'm going to try to address some of those on this particular topic. List of definitions in the health equity report includes definitions of institutional racism, structural racism, and are we to assume that these are always factors in health inequity?
Yes.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Please explain how Kenosha County Public Health, or Kenosha County as a system of government, where are some specific examples of systemic or structural or institutional racism in our organization that are preventing people from getting the health services that they need?
Well, I think that's multi-pronged. It's hard to answer that because
structural racism in Kenosha County government?
I cannot be the judge of that.
So how do we know we have inequity if we don't even know we have structural racism?
Well, because we're looking at access to care and health behaviors and health.
We're the care provider.
Right.
So we have to determine what our obstacles are in providing out. You know, we're trying to determine through assessment what people's obstacles coming in. But it's implied here that there's inequity. It's implied that there's institutional and structural racism, but you're not able to give me an example of that.
I'll have to get back to you on that because I think that's
okay.
May I interject? Are you asking specifically about Kenosha County?
Right, because that's the world
government,
we're
or are you asking about the county as a whole?
I'm talking about Kenosha County Public Health as a department, Kenosha County government as a whole, because that's what we are participating in. That's what we can affect.
Mm-hmm.
So, if it's not within the department or within the government as a whole, where are the examples of institutional and structural racism that impact health inequity in our community specifically?
I think that could be a whole discussion, a whole, separate look. And I will just sort of look to not knowing what questions might come up, I brought a whole group of people in case there was anything to, so I'm gonna look at the audience if there was anything to, yes, Julia.
Okay, I'm the Julia Robinson.
I'm very hard of hearing. If you could come closer.
I'd be happy to. Sorry, you can't hear through my mask. My father's in heart failure, and I'm not allowed to be out. I'm the vice president of the Board of Health. I was an alderman for 10 years, so I understand some of your concerns regarding understanding the role of the county, the city, the various entities that kind of play a part. I think my first reaction when hearing your question was that there are many systems that are constantly in play, and just as the county and the city sometimes have friction with where they're bumping into each other, and sometimes we as a Department of Public Health also kind of try to find ways to wiggle into all the different parts of people's lives. Where is there some systemic racism? Well, it can be as simple, or to create the obstacles, it can be as simple as the fact that when the hospital downtown moved to St. Catharines, out where they had more space, could create a better building and all sorts of wonderful stuff, it wasn't on a bus line. And so that meant that anybody who didn't have a car was in trouble. How are they going to get to,
how is that racism?
You asked about how it was a systemic system. And when you look at
I asked, what are the examples of structural and institutional racism in our community that impact health inequity?
When we look back at the poverty level, who rides the transportation systems, and therefore who has obstacles for access, transportation becomes one of those big systems. And so when you have a health system moving out and it is not on a bus line, that becomes an issue.
It creates disparities.
It creates disparities.
But how is it racism?
I can chime in. Hi, my name is Susie Culp. I'm the Senior Health Equity Advisor for the Division of Public Health at the State Department of Health Services. So I think that's a really great example of, I'm not super familiar with the details of Kenosha County, but the example of a health system moving to a different neighborhood that's not on a bus line, tying that to racism. Are folks familiar with the Federal Housing Authority and the Homeowners Loan Corporation?
Somewhat.
Some yes. nods, yeah.
This is
somewhat.
A big, big discussion on the side. Can you just...
Yep, sorry,
instead
I'm
saying
tying,
like, tying
it to racism.
Something to racism,
yep.
I want a very, I really want a conclusive answer that says this is why it's racism.
Yep.
Because
so,
the hospital system in a free market society is also a business
totally.
And can choose to set up, and they might not, there's, how do we know that they're using race as a determinant of moving away from downtown?
Yeah, I don't think the hospital system is, and I think to your question earlier in terms of how can we measure equity, these inequities happen over generations and generations of lack of access to resources, and so I think to measure it, it will take a very long time to see that we're making progress, but in the 70s, the Federal Housing Authority created maps that are referred to as redlining, where they identified specific areas that
we
were based
on. We could talk about redlining all day.
Minority
yeah.
populations, so racism where people were, areas were disinvested from, people were not able to buy homes, and it concentrated minority communities in certain areas of a city and kept them there. There were housing covenants, which mean you couldn't sell your house to a black person. Very overtly racist policies that created a concentration of certain populations in various parts of communities' geographic locations. And so when a hospital system that was accessible to that community then moves to an area that is now inaccessible to that community that was created with the intention of putting them in a disenfranchised area, that is how it's tied into racism.
Okay,
because now
so
that is inaccessible.
It's tied in, what you're explaining to me,
yep.
and correct me if I'm wrong, is the structural or systemic racism was in the housing redlining.
Yep.
Okay. It's not the hospital who's being racist by moving out west?
Nope.
Okay. So what is a specific example currently in our community of,
well, in Kenosha County government, you asked originally.
You know, it, you know, in your department or in the organization that we know we can affect and the services we know we can affect, are there examples of systemic racism within our government and in our department? And if so, what are they? Or what are they in the community that are keeping us from being successful at reaching equity?
I will have to get back to you on that.
Okay.
I don't have a judgment on that.
The next question was, how do you measure inequity?
Well, there's many ways to measure inequity, and that's through, you know, whether it's certain data points, whether it's education,
like
housing, transportation, any of those sorts of things of, you know, who's receiving access to care. So, I mean, there's many ways to measure that.
I asked, how do you measure inequity? How do you measure health inequity specifically?
Those are health inequities.
Okay. So health equity, everyone has a fair and just opportunity to be as healthy as possible. This requires removing obstacles to health, such as poverty and discrimination, and their consequences, including powerlessness and lack of access to good jobs with fair pay, lack of access to quality education and housing, safe environments, and healthcare. If the goal of the health department is to achieve health equity, that is an absolutely enormous undertaking. Is it the job of the health department to be involved in removing obstacles to quality education?
We are involved with education systems and with hospitals and with other health systems to be able to help. So, for example, you know, our hospitals are governed by JCO requirements or Joint Commission requirements, and so they often collaborate with us in order to help them to achieve equity within their realms, like, for example, through the community health assessment, or our federally qualified health center. How are we reaching different populations and covering different services so that we can reach different populations
the
that
quality
way.
Quality education here, though, I think in the definition means like access to good K-12 education and post-secondary education, not necessarily community outreach.
But I think, you know, there's obviously a health component in with education as far as do the children and the staff, you know, have, you know, appropriate nursing services in the schools, or do they have, you know, we can help out with the curriculum committee for health education, or, you know, when throughout COVID, when they needed to be trained on contact tracing. So, I mean, there's certainly many touch points with health within the education system that we do help in order to try to keep kids healthy there.
I have just a lot of questions that are equity related that have to do with how we handle things during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
School closures, remote learning, and rolling quarantines that kept kids out of school more than in the classroom contribute significantly to learning loss. Learning loss was greatest for students from high poverty areas. Learning loss grew the academic achievement gap significantly. Pandemic learning loss is projected to equate to annual income and lifetime income losses that are double and triple for Hispanic and Black students than they are for white students, according to McKinsey and Company.
According to what?
McKinsey and Company, they're a research firm.
Yeah, I know.
Did you know that school closures would disproportionately affect low-income and minority students?
Yeah, I mean, obviously looking back, hindsight is 2020, okay. Right? Like, there was a lot of things we learned, a lot of things that...
60% of Kenosha Unified students qualify for free or reduced lunch. A high percentage of students, their only meals are eaten at school. Breakfast, lunch, after-school snack. Teachers and school staff are the largest group of mandatory reporters for child abuse and neglect. Substance abuse among students is often first identified in a school setting. Closing businesses forced many families below the poverty line. For many students, school is the safest place in their life. School closures and distance learning are the biggest contributing factor to the ongoing youth mental health crisis. Low-income students are the least likely to be able to access mental health services. Has the health department worked to measure the impacts of pandemic school closures on health equity in Kenosha County?
No, we have not yet. I think that's a really good data set that would be important to capture.
In June of 2021, the case James versus Heinrich, Justice Rebecca Bradley emphatically opined that local health officers do not have the statutory power to close schools. In the fall of 2021, after the Supreme Court decision, did you imply to local schools in the county that you had the power to close them?
No.
I remember sitting in this very room and hearing questions about this because people in the community were contacted that the health department did imply in their recommendations about COVID that if the recommendations were not followed, that you could close them down. And I believe there was legal action warned on that. Why did you continue to recommend school closures when you knew that they would result in inequitable impacts on low-income and minority students? And would you ever do it again?
If I can interject just for a second, back to that conversation that occurred at that meeting, I believe it was in October of 21, where there was accusations that Jen was telling schools to close. Early on, we had weekly teleconferences with our county executive's office, and Incorporation Council was also weighing in on those. And we knew right away that Jen didn't have the authority to close schools. So we never told schools to shut their doors. Now, whatever misinformation came out, I know Supervisor Decker was at the meeting.
I had documentation.
Yeah. And that was misinformation from one school out west of the eye that for some reason thought that Jen was telling them to close. We do not have that authority, nor did we ever think we had that authority. When school boards would call her or a principal would call her, we'd say, you have a school board. They make that decision. We don't. That was a clear message from our office through her. Now, whatever happened in that one school, they never closed, did they? No. And because we didn't have the authority to make them, they kept their doors open. The pandemic was terrible. Yes, we know kids has a huge impact on lives moving forward. So what can we do as a community to help address that? You know, it can't be this political discussion about...
It's not political. I'm talking about from the very start of the pandemic, there were people who had big concerns about how the downstream effects were going to affect equity. And
can I ask a question about equity?
You haven't been recognized, and also you're not on the committee or another supervisor, so we don't take questions unless you're recognized.
Other people to speak and answer questions. So that's an example of...
I'm the chair of this committee, and I haven't recognized you yet.
And I raised my hand so that you could, if you could, at some point.
So I was in the middle of stating that, in effect, these recommendations caused a huge, huge increase in the academic achievement gap for our low-income and minority students. And they impacted our youth immensely with mental health, substance abuse, recruitment into gangs, unreported child abuse. I want to understand, in terms of equity, does Kenosha County Public Health have any initiative or objective to address how pandemic learning loss is contributing to health inequity?
No, I think that if we had funding, that would be an amazing amount of information that would be very helpful. And yes, I would agree to look into that.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee?
Without clear definition of what the systemic racist issues are, how do we correct them? And it seems like this has been almost like an accusation. And if you can't give us a clear definition of what we're doing that's racist, how do we correct it? We need that definition, and it needs to be clear.
Right, and I am neither judge nor jury on who's racist, what's racist. What I am looking at is health equity and what barriers exist for people to achieve health.
Yes, but your definition of health equity implies that there's institutional and structural racism that contributes to health equity.
And globally there is. Can I pinpoint or call out?
But we want to know, as a county board and as a committee, what are some specific examples that we can address that in our community?
I don't know that I would be the judge or jury to tell you what that is. I think that needs to come from a broader discussion.
Supervisor Gearson?
Is that our definition?
No.
It's not. That's not our
definition. These were definitions that we put into the health equity report that we pulled from other sources because we were asked to.
All right. So I'm glad that I understand that. To pivot a little bit, along with this analysis, we also got a fiscal analysis, and it showed that there were about $3.7 million of programs that were that had this type of element embedded in the program. And asthma was one of them. The biggest one was the home visiting, $1.5 million. The lead program, we had a really good presentation on the lead program. All of these have elements of things that are required in order to qualify, but again, income was the driver that I remember seeing. And
in those three programs, yes.
Yeah, and it probably for most of your $108 million budget, there's huge income qualification is a huge driver for these, you know, being able to get into these programs, right? I mean, that's when I was an auditor, I remember that being the case. So that was the 3.7 million, are those part of the 9.8 million health budget or?
Correct.
Okay, so are there other programs that have these types of elements in the 108 million total budget of human services?
I'd have to peel back some of the grants, but generally grants coming out of the state that, for example, in Children and Family Services would have equity components. Certainly the programs we run, we have that in our contracts that they, provide services to also. Most, like in certain divisions, it's not an income eligibility. You get in there because of an issue with your family or you have an addiction issue or something like that. So yeah, we try to apply those concepts across the board. So it's just not a narrow focus into health.
Yeah. If someone does get into those programs and they do have income, they end up having to pay some some money back to the government quite often, right?
Depending on the program.
Yeah. I remember auditing WIC and MCH in the 70s and 80s, and so there's an evolution to this concept that wasn't, I mean, there was still equity, the idea of equity was still in these programs then, but the nomenclature has evolved over time. What was the rough time frame when the nomenclature started to find its way into the kind of definitions that we saw here? What was that, something that happened in the 80s, the 90s, the 2010? Is that?
Well, the social determinants of health was really solidified as a stronger definition, I would say, in the last 20 years.
So roughly 20 years.
Yeah.
But I think equity has been part of our human services programs since I can remember. I mean,
it has been, yeah.
And we might have called it something different, but it's been there for, going back when I started looking at it in the 70s. So, now to that chart, that's my district, that Alice chart, 39%. Can you tell me about that? That's the village, the town of Summit.
Yes.
Has 39.
I'm actually going to look to our epidemiologist, if that's okay. Dan, St. Filippo.
So this chart here, and we got a bar chart, not the GIS chart, and it showed that 39% of the ALIS was in the town of Summers.
So it's actually the town of Summers. In the town of Summers, 39% of households are ALIS households.
Yeah.
37.
Yeah. Well, tell me about that. What's going on in my district where we have that happening?
What are you doing there, Dave?
Yeah, sorry.
So just to clarify, that is the town, not the village.
It is the town. Yeah, my district has the town and village in it, although I share a little bit of the village with someone much better than me. But
I think partly the nature of the town where there's all these different chunks that are kind of disparately.
Yeah.
In Kenosha, I think that probably has some effect on that number. But essentially, the way ALIS is calculated, it's specific to region. So, it's a measure of poverty, you could say.
Yeah.
For example, there's the federal poverty level. That's one commonly known example. But then ALIS takes things a step further. It takes into account cost of living differences.
Right.
Regions, it looks at what the cost of, it essentially looks at, what amount of income is required to meet these certain basic requirements for life. So whether that's transportation, housing, education, those kinds of things. And then it varies depending on whether you're looking at a family of four, a family of two, whatever the case may be. As far as why,
what's happening in that area, you don't know.
I don't know.
Now, I would like to, if there's something you can share that isn't confidential, so I can understand if there's.
Sure, and all this data, the ALIS data is all public, based on publicly available data. Yeah, I can think of that word.
If there's some area of need that needs to get addressed in a certain way that is not being addressed, that would be interesting
sure.
to know, and it's in a town, the town of Summers, which eventually will all go to the city in 2035. Mm-hmm. So that town will all be, pieces of it as they hook up to utilities and other things happening will go into the city. But the boundary agreement has all of that going into the city by 2035. So eventually that ALIS piece will all be in the city, but I still would like to know what's happening there and then maybe if there's something that needs to be done. And because that's the highest area, using a pretty good measurement, that 37% ALIS measurement, which I'm glad we talked about that here. That's an important thing.
Yeah, perhaps it's one of those components that kind of make up the ALIS algorithm. Perhaps one of those just happens to be more expensive in that region, so it's harder to attain that level of income required to, exceed that.
Yeah. We're really passionate about the kids here, and we really want to do everything we can. And it's not, it's, there's adults too, but so if some child has some disadvantage, and for a lot of the reasons that you discussed, let's say they have poor vision, preschool poor vision, would this type of a program help them get care rather than waiting until fourth grade and a lot of detrimental things happen with their... Could you tell me a little bit of a specific example of how someone would be better off because of this equity idea?
So that specific example, vision, KUSD employs our public health nurses as their school nurses for K through 8. And we do vision screening every year. And so that's a perfect example of how many children don't have access to get vision tested. So we do their vision screening, then we recommend them and move them on to services so they can get glasses or whatever services they need for their vision. And so that is something we do annually.
That starts in kindergarten or preschool?
What age does that start, Lori? I want to say second, but...
I believe it is second.
Yeah. Because of developing eyes, it just takes a little
more. I didn't hear. When does it start?
Second grade, I think.
Oh, second grade.
I'll get back to you for sure on that.
But kindergartners do get a basic vision screening.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, kindergarten people.
I'm not sure who here is from the public and who here is part of your team, Jen.
I invited many people depending upon what the questions, so that I can make sure we had answers.
So the vision piece, you could actually catch a kid who's got bad vision in kindergarten rather than letting it go till fourth grade with
correct.
A program like this.
Correct. Well, same with dental, same with other, yeah.
Good. I'll yield the floor at this point. Thanks.
Any other questions from supervisors? One more supervisor.
I got one more. So I just want to be clear. So far, you have not been able to identify any specific systemic racism issues within the county. Is that
no, and nor am I looking for that. I am, you know, bound by programs and grants and services that we are looking at what are the barriers to getting asthma care and fixating on that, you know, like, so it's not like we're
just for the
looking
sake of
for,
time,
yeah.
I just wanted that to be clear.
Supervisor Decker?
I just have a question.
Member here.
I had one.
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear you.
Didn't see
you.
No problem. No. Just to piggyback on the earlier questions about the systematic, you know, the implication that there's systematic racism in Kenosha County and in our rules. Can you point to any specific policies? We're legislators here. Is there any specific policies?
I have not
in
reviewed
Kenosha,
those.
Any in Kenosha County, in our programs, in our government that is putting up these walls and barriers and disproportionately affecting people in those areas or to where they're having harder access to get to these systems? Is there, I mean, that's kind of,
right.
As our job as legislators here in this county government, we have the opportunity to maybe make a change in all areas. So, have you identified policies that maybe they're not racist, maybe they're rooted in racism that are disproportionately affecting different communities, different areas on the map? What can we do to change those rules, to change those policies? And I know this doesn't apply to county. My closest example I can get is to, you know, say a family that is on food share. You know, they've lost a job, lost income, they're getting food share benefits. The moment they get that first check, they lose those food share benefits. And now they're, you know, and it creates barriers in even accepting a job. Is if I accept this job, I'm going to lose my food share benefits. And it's harder for them to get out of that place because there's no like grace period there. So that's an example that I've personally seen. And I know there's more examples like that around where if we were to change the rules, change the programs, it may help people, you know, move forward and move out of poverty. So do you have any examples of that where, you know, that you could bring to us and that we could change the policies, change the procedures so that we are our services offered by Kenosha County are not disproportionately affected different communities?
Well, I think every division is looking at that, right? I can only speak for public health. And yes, there were things. When for example, I came into the health department, we had nobody working in our clinic that was a person of color or bilingual. That's a barrier to service, right? Because people need to be able to come to our clinic to get the services they need. We are now at 25% persons of color in the health department so that we can represent the community we serve. That's one example. Another example is...
Is a person working in the clinic's skin color a barrier to getting service for someone?
Yes.
And how so?
Because persons of color want to go to their clinicians, their service providers, and see people that look like them. And be recognized and know that there are people that are, you know, for a variety of reasons, understand what they're going through or what they're presenting with, depending upon the service.
Okay.
So I think another example would be, you know, we learned right here in Kenosha County that our black and brown residents were disproportionately affected by COVID, being hospitalized and dying. So we formed the Health Equity Task Force in order to reach those populations with education, vaccination, all the rest of that, in order to stave off the hospitalizations and the mortality there. I mean, so there are a lot of examples. I think every division is looking at that. Am I reviewing the whole county or what other people are doing? No, but certainly we're looking at that internally with our policies and procedures in the health department, and we've been making many tweaks and adjustments to various programs as far as what do we need to do to be more knowledgeable and understanding of the barriers that exist.
Okay, it would be interesting to see that data in future reports.
Sure.
Of here's what we're doing, you know, because obviously this report was informational. I would just like to see what we're doing to help with that. So
I can just add one example out of health, if I just real quickly. The Division of Aging, Disability, and Behavioral Health Services, when the pandemic was going full blast, recognized that some of our older population was very uncomfortable and at high risk to go to grocery stores.
Yeah.
So they developed a program with one of our local agencies to do shopping for these folks. So, you know, to get them the food that they need to continue in their homes and feel safe. And that program still exists to this day to reach out to that older group and more at risk for health issues. And that's a white, black, brown, whatever issue. So that's to everyone.
I think what Supervisor Stock was asking though was, what do we have in place that is a barrier, and how, you know, we need help identifying that. If you're the experts on barriers that cause health inequities, it's our responsibility as public servants to work with you to understand what those are, and if they're existing in a way that we can control them, whether it's through policy, legislation, a system of government that's within our control. Adding new programs are nice, then you recognize where there's an inequity or a new type of inequity with the shopping or with the, you know, the clinic or whatever, but we want to understand what the existing barriers are so we can help break them down as well.
Yeah.
Supervisor Decker?
To follow up on Supervisor Stock, Supervisor Stock was asking about policies and procedures. We didn't have a policy in place not to hire people of color in the health department, correct?
A policy to not hire?
Correct, because you said we didn't have any people of color in the health department. It's not a policy we had
correct.
In place that was some systemic racist policy, just happened to be that way. So it's not something that we can...
So do we have a policy that we have to have people of color working there?
No, but it's good for the community, right? So
I don't disagree,
right.
but
no policy, no.
Right, so if it's not a policy, it's not something that just happened to be that no one was hired that was a person of color. It's not like it was a system that was put in place by us, which is what systemic racism is a system that was put in place. So there was no system to put in place not to hire a person of color in the health department. So it's not that it was systemic racism in the health department. And that's what we're questioning. But on the Alice chart up there, which is nice that it's a map, I see Wheatland and Twin Lakes are the same color as the city of Kenosha. What is the health department doing for Wheatland and Twin Lakes?
So that's where part of the community health assessment is trying to assess then, you know, this is one data point, right? So what then do those communities need? And that's where the community health assessment is so vital to say, to gather from the community. We hope more people, it's open till Sunday, just to put the plug out there, that we gather more information to say, okay, we know that there's an income inequality. What programs, we can't solve, you know, all the problems, but what programs and services do we have in existence then to make sure we get out there.
That's what I'm asking. What do we have in place for Wheatland and Twin Lakes?
Well, all of our programs and services, you know, serve all of the county. But if there's
how are we targeting Wheatland and Twin Lakes?
We need to know what the gaps in services are so that we can take those specific services to Wheatland.
So we don't know what those are?
That's what we're finding out through the community health assessment.
When was the last time we had a community health assessment?
3 years ago.
So this is completely different than 3 years ago?
Yes.
Wheatland and Twin Lakes didn't have these problems 3 years ago?
We didn't have the data 3 years ago.
We didn't have.
This
is a new data set from 3 years ago?
Correct.
Yeah, what was the data set?
So our community health assessment in the past, I would argue, was very inequitable in that we not the health department, as a county, would call 400 random residents, and it was all by landline. So you can imagine the demographic that we got in the community health assessment every 3 years was not good data to let us know what's going on in Kenosha.
Okay, but you didn't ask this question 3 years ago?
No, that this isn't a question. This is just a data point we pulled together for the report.
Well, but it's still a question on the survey because that you asked what the income was. You had to ask a question to get this data.
This is from an ALICE data set. It's a national data set.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you're pulling this question. I took the assessment or whatever, and you asked the dollar. The income.
Right. It's just more data points to sort of pull together. But we, for the community health assessment, yes, we have that one survey. We also pull from census, and we pull from the youth risk behavior survey, and we pull from all these other sources to sort of look at what's the picture now of Kenosha County, and what can we do, and what do we need to focus on, and all of that.
Right, but you knew 3 years ago that was a question 3 years ago, the income level, correct?
I am not sure that income level was on there 3 years ago. I don't think it was.
Because on one of the charts, didn't it say that income is 50% of
health outcomes?
Yes.
Right, but we've been able to pull that from other data sources, not necessarily
okay,
community
what I'm
health
saying
assessment.
Is, we knew, we should have known if we were asking the economic or the household income, we should have known from 3 years ago that Wheatland and Twin Lakes were in the same situation as the city of Kenosha, roughly. So what in the past 3 years have we done?
We did not have
that?
It 3 years ago. We just got our epidemiologist in the middle of COVID, and the data that was collected on the community health assessment did not tease to that level.
It didn't ask income?
It did ask income, but it doesn't tease out to what community, so that we could target our focus efforts at that time.
So we didn't know based on zip code or whatever from 3 years ago?
No.
It was just like a big chunk of Kenosha County? So we couldn't.
It just said the 400 people that responded to the survey had this.
So
level.
You didn't know where they lived,
right.
Zip code or anything.
It's.
Okay. Well, that doesn't help.
Yeah.
The targeting communities.
I agree.
When you don't know where they
I agree. Live. That's why we're.
Okay.
We've
gotcha.
Changed the community health assessment to make
gotcha.
Make that
I
right.
Understand.
Yeah.
I didn't realize we didn't ask where they
yeah.
lived 3 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gee, you better know.
Supervisor Bashaw.
Thank you.
If I can then. Stay on this map because it's been on my mind since it was initially addressed earlier, and the ALICE data sets. One of the analogies you gave was around eyeglasses, eye exams for kids of a certain age, and you specifically called out KUSD. What happens west of the eye?
So the only reason why is because we have the contract with KUSD to provide nursing services. We certainly do work with all of the other 10 districts west of the eye and everywhere else in the private schools. They provide their own services. I'm not sure how they do their own vision screenings. They have their own nurses. They procure those services. If they were ever to call us to ask about that would be a gap and then a service we could provide.
You're the Kenosha County Health Department, not the Kenosha City Health Department.
Correct.
So working with KUSD, you can call out, but they're independent. What interface do you have with the health services in the schools west of KUSD?
I mean, they do call us when they need, you know, for example, during the pandemic, they called and said, well, how can we do contact tracing, isolation and quarantine, getting into the state systems? You know, so whenever they have a need, whether it's vision or contact tracing, we can help them with that. And we speak with them a lot.
The impression I have from that, though, is a little bit different. The other thing you called out was the hospital as an analogy. So hospital relocating. Some of the services, not all the services, but they took the emergency department and moved it into a different location. they didn't take all services and relocate them. But the analogy was related to them having accessibility because of bus routes. Do we have an accessible hospital west of the I or in the western part of the county, since we look to be weighted the same as the city as far as...
No, and we know transportation's an issue out there. So that is something that, you know, we're all considering is, you know, just for the health department's perspective, we, one of the good things that came out of the pandemic was we can't keep expecting people to come to us. We need to be more mobile. So how do we take all of our services to be much more mobile, to be out in the community? So
it took a pandemic, though, to recognize that all or majority of, I hate broad brushes where you paint everything, so I'll try to be careful with that. But the majority of health department services are delivered to the city of Kenosha, not west of Kenosha, pre-pandemic.
So we did have a clinic run out of the Kenosha County Center for several years that had very, very low attendance. So there wasn't a big push for folks out there to come in and use those services. We are, though, partnering with the Community Health Center out in Salem Lakes to have a presence out there and provide services that they don't. So that partnership will continue and move forward. But during the pandemic, we shut down the County Center Clinic because it just wasn't receiving visitors.
No,
we're going to team with the Community Health
Center. We provide WIC services out there.
Yeah, we provide WIC services only, and we'll team with the Community Health Center in Salem Lakes and have an office out there.
Okay, so we are expanding our thought process to think beyond the boundaries of Kenosha.
Absolutely.
Always.
Why did it take so long?
We've had that clinic out there for years. So that was out there. I became department in 2008. It was there when I took that position. So I don't know how long that went back, but we had a presence. We have a presence out there.
Immunizations out there myself.
Yeah, so it existed and has.
And we still have the space, so, and that's part of the becoming more mobile. If, and we have the appointment for all clinic services on the website. If they wanted to meet us at our Uptown Clinic or out at KCC, or we've been doing thousands of vaccinations in people's homes. So, you know, that's all part of, you know, how can we meet people where they are and be more mobile.
You've been doing thousands of vaccinations in homes?
Yes.
First time I've heard that number. All right, because the question was about equity. That's what this map really draws to my mind is equity. Well, clearly there's an imbalance in that, the western part of the county. I live in the Brighton area, so I see we're a little bit darker than the Paris area. Mm-hmm. Paris is primarily farm or agricultural based residences, so they don't come to clinics.
Right.
Spin on it, wipe it off, and go back to work. It's pretty simple. You're not dying, you're okay. That's true.
That is true.
So I'm looking at balance and what I
and this is just income, right? So, you know, this is looking at, you know, so disparities can look at many things, not just income. So that's where we can't just take one data set and say, okay, now we need this, right? We have to pull together, well, what is the need? What does the community want? You know, even let's say if it's not a data high point, right? You know, so there's what does the data show, what does the community need and want, and having, you know, those conversations to truly make sure that we, and again, we don't solve all problems, but what can our programs and services provide, and if not us, what other resources can and should be, you know, so that collective impact.
You just stated the inequity, because the majority of the focus of the health department appears to continue to be toward those east of the eye, not toward those west of the eye.
No, in fact, some of our data, you know, we have over 60 programs and services, but many of them are heavily focused on west of the eye. It is not mostly city.
Okay. I'd like a list to understand that more clearly. Thank you.
Any other supervisors? Okay, we're going to have to move on.
Okay.
But is it a quick one?
It should be quick. The audit you mentioned, when was the last audit done?
It was before I came on board. I think it was in the spring of 2019.
So we're due for another one? You said every 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, soon? It's loose. So we'll probably come up again within the next 2 years.
Okay. Can I get a copy of that audit?
We would love to invite you all there.
You would love to invite me to help with the audit?
To help watch the audit, yeah.
Could I get a copy of the last audit?
Yes. I'll have to, I don't know if there was an official report on that, but I'll
there's
I'll
no report.
I'm assuming there is. I just wasn't here at the time, so I'll have to.
I get it. So I'd like to see the audit, please. And I yield. Was that quick enough?
If there are
enough,
no
please?
Other questions from the committee or supervisors, I'd like to recognize Tamara Coleman.
Oh, my question is long, but I got so many, I don't think we have enough time. But I will say this. I am like, I could cry right now because I cannot believe I just sat through an hour and a half meeting listening to you guys badger about equity and inclusion and diversity and maps. And you want to talk about equity? I'm telling you what equity is. It's when you look around a table of people like this that don't look like your community. That's inequity. When I can sit on the Kenosha Community Health Center board and we talk about the barriers of this community, that's inequity. When you look at every single chart in medical, so we'll talk about the Department of Health. When you look at every single chart you have, there's an equity in African American Hispanics. We're at the bottom. When you look at the state of Wisconsin, we're the number one, this is the worst place to educate African American students. Your data is not lying. It's telling you a story. It's telling you that you have a problem in our community. And it's not about racism. It's about inequities. There's barriers that...
I agree.
Wait, I still keep talking? It's about barriers that are created, that are compounded. And it's not just y'all's fault. It's decades of history, of systems that have been put in place of why there are so many inequities. And I can't believe I just sat through an hour and a half meeting from my work schedule to listen to people like debate if there's inequities or debate if there's racism or debate if. But again, look at the people that are around the table. You're trying to solve a problem with people that don't look like the problem, okay? So my question is what are you gonna do about this?
Okay.
Okay, so Dr. Jen formed an equity task force. I have personally presented to the Human Service Department, the committee. There's work being done, and it's good work, and we're closing barriers and we're closing gaps. But my heart is like heavy because I just sat through all this. Like, this is my leadership in my community that I live in. Wow.
I think you're taking it the wrong way.
No. I'm hurt, really, because I'm sitting here in a room full of educated leaders, and I'm listening to the conversation, and my heart is heavy because this is my community that I love, and I'm like, this is the conversations that we're having, and we're talking about equity, and people are actually saying they don't see the inequity, or they're challenging racism. And I'm sorry, Supervisor, Chairperson, I'm just, my heart, if I'm talking passionately, it's because I'm really hurt, because I can't believe we're having this dialogue, and people are like hurting in our community, and we're arguing or debating or discussing about if there's inequities or what are there. Like, you can't even see them. And that's sad for me because I live it every day. So I'm sorry if that probably wasn't what I was going to say 15 minutes ago. I was going to actually help with the answer, but I've sat now through too much.
And point taken.
It's really sad for me.
I appreciate your input. I do.
I hope y'all do better. Really, I do.
I brought this. I don't have copies. I would like to share it with anybody. Let me know. I send you a copy. We have not been debating whether or not inequity exists or structural or systemic racism exists. We have asked for specific examples in our community, in our government that we are a part of, and in the department where we have oversight. And no one has been giving us any examples that we know we can address. That's what we are asking, not whether or not it exists or not. What are our specific examples in our own community so that we know what we're tackling, not in general. So here is an excellent example of super duper inequity, okay? English language proficiency by race and ethnicity for Kenosha Unified. And this is an example of pandemic learning loss. In 2017, 69% of Asian students could read at grade level, 52% of white, 29% Hispanic, 20 for black. In 2021, which was the next year they took the test after the pandemic, that plummeted for black students from 20% in 2017 to 6.2% can read at grade level. And it's up to 10.4 now. But the impact on black and Hispanic students from pandemic learning loss is illustrated in reading. It's illustrated in math. I have it for Milwaukee Public Schools. I have it for more affluent areas like Mequon and Cedarburg. And you can see all this on WISE-Wisconsin DPI. And if education is a major determinant of health outcomes for a person, we need to address how school closures affected health equity. And I really feel strongly about this, and we know inequities exist.
I agree with you. Can I just add one thing? Inequities have been around in education for decades.
Yeah.
All the pandemic did, whether we closed schools or not, was just pull a Band-Aid off of a larger problem.
I agree.
The equity in education has been around forever, Chairperson. And so I know we're trying to highlight it around just the last 3 years, but if you go back 10 years, our data looks crappy.
It looks terrible.
It looks horrible.
So,
and so my recommendation would be is to look at, yes, why, but it's not about closing the schools, because even if the schools would have stayed open, the gap would have still been there. It may have been a smaller gap, but the gap would have been there because the gap has always been there, right?
I agree
so
with
we're,
you.
So we're looking at a problem that's much larger than just COVID-19.
It is, I agree, and we could talk about that in an offline. But my point is that we're spending millions of dollars, millions, whether it's state or federal grant money or local, on resources and personnel to address either directly or indirectly inequities in our community. And we should be able to direct some of that more to our youth in that situation. Because the more that bar goes down, and I'm glad the pandemic is highlighting the achievement gap, the less likely they'll have healthy outcomes as they grow. So it needs to be addressed. I really want to make that an objective of this group. So we have gone very long.
We want to fix health equity, inequities. We want to make sure it is equitable. But when we're told there's systemic racism, and that is a cause of it, how do we fix the systemic racism? We have to figure out what it is to fix it. And we're not being told where the systemic racism is in our systems in Kenosha County government.
Okay, it's right here in front of you, Ms. Decker.
How is this systemic racism?
When you look, first of all, you need a...
We're not going to get into a debate here. Okay.
You need diversity, equity, inclusion training. That's what you need. And then you'll understand the whole system, and then you'll understand the racism.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Coleman.
I have asked what procedures and policies we have in place that are systemically racist, and no one gives us answers. We can't fix it if we're not told what the policies... You don't know what it is. No. I asked what it
was. All right, guys. All right, order, please. So the question is, do we want to move forward and do the financial portion of this presentation, which I think is very important, but we can save it for another day? The purpose of this meeting was to be able to have this very difficult discussion, and I do think that I'm very grateful that all these people came to attend and offered input, because I agree. These people don't reflect the population of the community, and I'm glad that more people came to attend. However, anyone can run for office and sit at this table, okay? So the financial portion of this is where we are able to look at, are we doing our job, and are we spending taxpayers' money effectively? And we have a lot of questions about the money, the resources, the people involved. I think that's going to be another hour or 90-minute meeting. And then the community health assessment is another topic on this agenda. Do I have a motion to postpone the rest of the agenda to another date?
So moved. Second.
Could I just give a quick on the community health assessment, because it's ending on Sunday?
Okay, so...
I'm okay with the quick, if that's okay with the chair.
Before we have discussion on the motion, a quick announcement from Dr. Freyheit.
Yes, very quickly on the agenda item about the community health assessment, and I only ask thank you for because of its timeliness. It happens every 3 years, according to state statute. Oh, yes, can you? Thank you. It happens every 3 years, according to state statute. It is happening now. We grossly modernized it, you know, exactly to your point of it was not collecting good data. It is online. We are near 1,200 responses now, which is fabulous, because like I said, we used to only get 400. We're pulling up some statistics for you, and it closes on Sunday. If you have not taken it or had your family or your friends and everybody else take it, please have them take it, because we do need more people. It's within the margin of error, statistically significant enough. Of course, we'd like to see it much better, as you can look at west of the eye. Oh, that's the next slide. Sorry. First, I'll show you this slide as far as definitely there's more females than males that have taken it. We'd love to see more males, but it's within the margin of error that we can, you know, give it some credit. Have you not taken it yet? And it closes on Sunday. The next steps, the next process is that, and I'll just flip to this slide really quick, as far as regional, obviously we'd like to see a lot more people west of the eye giving us information and data, but this does, population-wise, numbers-wise, give us within the margin of error to be able to assess. So happens every 3 years statutorily. Next steps are that we will assemble all the data by February, look at everything, pull all of you and invite all of you as we have to the table when we started the community health assessment process, to then say, okay, now what? What can we do? What are the actionable items? Clearly we can't build Rome in a day, and we only are responsible for each of our own individual services and programs, but what can we do then for our community? So that whole discussion will happen in the spring, and by the summer, hopefully we will have a community health improvement plan. And that then carries us through the next 3 to 5 years to say, here's what we're gonna do. What is our top priority, or where do we need to put services, all of that sort of information. So this is just some quick information as of where we stand with the assessment as of last night, and it's open till Sunday, so thank you.
Thank you. Any discussion on the motion to postpone the remainder of the agenda to a later date? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. One quick announcement. I will stay here after this meeting and openly speak to anybody who wants to discuss this topic for as long as you'd like. Supervisor Kubicki?
In the future, can we have these meetings like you normally do? Because work, that's why I wouldn't mind staying, but I'm short-staffed right now.
This was a special meeting called, and not everybody has, you know, availability, but...
Right, that's my point.
No, but we did
happy
attempt
to stay here for
we did
the whole
attempt to schedule
thing.
This.
I just wanted that for the record, okay? Thank you.
I appreciate everyone in attendance. Dr. Jen, thank you for the very thorough presentation of and your very articulate responses. Same to you, Director Jansen. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I make a motion to adjourn. And
all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Meeting is adjourned.
I'll see you tonight, Dave.
All right.
We'll see you at all.
I'm sorry. I'm just going to
because this is just
yeah. Right. So we'll go further down. We're starting health because health equity is part of that.